You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, April 16th, 2014. My name is Matt Binder.
I am Michael Brooks.
And this is the three-time award-winning The Majority Report. It is a Matt and Mike Wednesday. This is what, your third day of Matt and Mike in a row.
Getting cozy. And now we're going to go and do the conventional introduction.
Yes, we will.
Where we are broadcasting from.
Oh, I forgot all about that.
No, it's fine. Go ahead, man.
We are broadcasting live to tape in the literal but not metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building.
In the fashionable Dowland District of New York City. That's right, folks. All brand new stories for you. Matt and I are just going to be holding it down today with no guest. Police unit that spied on Muslims has been disbanded in New York City. Very big news, but of course some question marks about what comes next. I can't get off of the Bill O'Reilly train, and he just had a conversation with John Calipari, the coach of the Kentucky men's basketball team, that, well, it will break your mind when you hear it, as it did mine.
This is such a Michael Brooks story that Mrs. Brooks even knew that, and Michael's mom sent him this story.
Yeah, to be clear, my mom,
literally, as we were listening to it to prepare for this.
She emailed me and said, you will want to listen to this. And it was the same story the same sound that my jaw was literally dropping to the floor listening to.
I don't think anyone takes Bill O'Reilly to the woodshed quite like you do, man.
Well, you know, after Al Franken became a senator, someone needed to step into the void there.
That's not all for today, though, folks. I will be bringing you that much-anticipated story where a pro-Bundy Ranch former Arizona sheriff who was there trying to stop the feds from confiscating Clive and Bundy's cattle, he shares a little bit of a secret Bundy Ranch strategy with the public, and I think it might be something that will shock you.
This story, just as the Bill O'Reilly, John Calipari moment was made for me, was definitely made for Matt.
Yeah.
This
is your third day straight of Bundy Ranch coverage.
I actually have to say, though, I have a kind of controversial theory about this story, which would almost push me in the ranks of the crazy conspiracy theorist. So we will hear, after Matt does an amazing job explaining this story, which is insane, you'll get my theory about it, which I think we'll find interesting and controversial.
Is it Benghazi?
Well, I never want to confirm or deny, obviously, Benghazi. But look, and I should say, the other thing, the soundboard, we don't know what happened to it. It's still not working. We haven't really had time. We don't know what Sam did with it, to be honest with you. But,
and let's also be honest,
we haven't really sat down because we have something that, not as a permanent replacement, obviously, but for a day or two, is a excellent replacement. We're calling it the Rush Board.
The Rush Revere board, because it's from his books.
I do have someone who can vouch for me. My horse.
Now,
can I get the necklace one?
Yes. These are all from Rush's children's book, all of these sounds. I'm looking for the necklace.
I think it's like the second or third from the top, from down from the top.
And he gave me a special necklace.
Yes. Now, I just want to play. I'm going to play just one, a few more just so you get a sense again of this board.
You have a speech impediment? Or was your mother simply as dumb as you are?
So some kind of nice things. But I just want to, play. All right, I'm going to play one more.
Seriously, the 1700s called. They want their clothes back. Sweet.
Okay. All right, so I obviously, we're getting a really puerile enjoyment out of this. But I just want to play one piece of sound. And again, I'm just doing this up top. This is a little bit more of an informal day. I own that this is a little bit puerile. But sorry, when I have what even is a good bad idea, I feel an obligation to share it with the Majority Report audience. So listen to this sound again.
I do have someone who can vouch for me. My horse.
Now, I am not... There's just something about how he says that. And I point that because Rush doesn't... Rush is
my
actually...
My horse!
My horse! Now, Rush is like, you know, he's a great broadcaster. Terrible person, all the rest. But there's something about how... My horse! That just is so Rush Limbaugh, and it's so hilarious, and it sounds so awkward, that I would like to put out a challenge.
Oh, you're going to make the call to...
Make the call to action up top right
now. Oh, here we go.
All right, so this is a call to action.
Now, before Michael gets to it, though,
yes.
Remember that you have, what, four or five show days. Actually, probably a week, 7 days.
Yes.
To do... So, well, Rush Limbaugh's show is not on the weekend. So you have 4 to 5 Rush Limbaugh shows to do this. So we can broadcast it to the Majority Report audience when we come back next Wednesday.
If Sam finds it funny.
Now,
but yes,
make the call.
Now, here's the call. Okay, I'm going to just play this again.
I do have someone who can vouch for me. My horse.
That's just hilarious to me. And a lot of people have done great prank phone calls with Rush where they bring up his drug habit. They tie him into knots about, you know, the... literally millions of horrific and horrible things he said throughout his career. But if somebody could get on the line with Rush and don't mention anything, no drug references, no politics, and just lead him up, like start talking about how, you know, give him something he'll love. Like, I used to own 2 McMansions, and now because of Obamacare, I live in a Motel 6, and I blame Benghazi, or, you know, whatever. Just leave it. Yeah, just you know, work them up well, get it going, get the you know, massage the androgynous zones.
Maybe call a feminist a slut.
Yeah, maybe call a feminist a slut. Maybe say, look, I'm not racist. It's just black people are terrifying. You know, whatever you need to do. And then you go, and I'll tell you what, Rush, I'm not lying about this. I have someone who will vouch for me, my horse. And if someone could do this, and actually I would actually like it if multiple people could do this, because I would just pretty much like one call a day for the rest of Rush Limbaugh's career to conclude with at least one person saying, and you know who could back me up on this, Rush? My horse.
I do have someone who can vouch for me, my horse.
Okay,
and now,
so
if
that's...
you go search for the Rush Limbaugh Revere soundboard online, you too can listen to all of these. This isn't only for the horse one.
That's right.
If you could find a way to work any of these sound clips into...
No, I'm going to stick. I got to draw this narrowly. I think the horse one is specifically...
That's your favorite?
I just think it works in a very particular way.
I understand.
I'm open to other challenges, but let's focus on the horse one for now, and play with the board.
If you could get him to say that in the DR he had a special necklace, that would
be it, you know, if you spontaneously, and it depends on your talent as a prank phone caller. Yes, if you're like, hey Rush, and somehow you get him to start talking about the Dominican Republic, if you can get him there to begin with, that's very impressive, and you drop a.
And he gave me a special necklace.
Then kudos. But the prime focus is my horse. All right, let me get to this one pretty important story. The gauntlet has been thrown down, and you can email us the files at majorityreporters@gmail.com. And seriously, like, I mean, we'll play this on the show. We'll post this on social media. Those of us, I'm sure many of you know that there was a special department of the NYPD that was committed to surveilling Muslims, not only in New York City, but actually across the Northeast. I mean, they had worked their way up in New Jersey, even a college in Maine at one point, I think, as I recall. Very broad monitoring program. Now, the New York City Police Department has decided to abandon this program and disband it. And it was called the Demographics Unit, was the name of it. And basically, the police department under the new police chief, William Bratton, who was appointed by Bill de Blasio, have decided to drop this program. Now, that means a couple of different things. Obviously, a serious response to the outrage of the community and the kind of abuses that – and I want to be clear, the abuses that were intrinsic in the program. I think it's very important to disaggregate these things. It's not to say – that obviously the NYPD is going to have some role in anticipating terrorist attacks and other types of things that do obviously legitimately threaten New York City. But this was a program that not only completely targeted in a universal and all-encompassing way the Muslim community, it actually was in its very founding and creation and approach already an incredible violation of the CIA's relationship with domestic law enforcement, because the program was actually created, was the brainchild of a CIA agent named Lawrence Sanchez, who helped establish the unit in 2003 while he was still on the CIA's payroll. So this, the very foundation of this program is probably illegal, and if not, if they had a technical workaround of it, profoundly questionable. And again, this was a program where it wasn't a question of building relationships and getting information and building community relations with different communities. Obviously, the vast, 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 endless majority of whom in New York City pose absolutely no threat, and of course are just people from different backgrounds, different immigrant communities, working and living and attempting to build lives in New York City. And Linda Sor of the Arab American Association of New York said in response to the declassification, to the release of documents demonstrating just the absolute breadth of this program, including, again, monitoring Muslim speakers in college campuses, seeing who was showing up for those speaking gigs, spying on different mosques, different restaurants, just this kind of all-encompassing surveillance of the Muslim community in New York. She said, "These documents showed us that where we live, that the cafes where we eat, and that where we pray, and that where I buy my groceries, they're able to see their entire lives on these maps, and it completely messed with our psyche as a community." Because that was the goal of the program, is to kind of build these full demographic map understandings of these communities. Now, moving forward, there's a couple of different – there's obviously question marks in terms of what happens next with the program, and there's still lawsuits that have been brought by civil rights advocates. One theory that it seems like this program is going to start getting – first of all, the specific unit is obviously disbanded, and certain practices are not going to go forward, they say. And now it seems as if practices like this under the NYPD are going to shift – to a model that more closely approximates the FBI. So as an example, the FBI can still do a lot of this kind of demographic information gathering, but as an example, it's prohibited from eavesdropping, documenting completely innocent conversations that would be protected by the First Amendment. The demographics unit was not operating within these confines. Another really important thing to just mention briefly, and this is a kind of perfect example of the just kind of stunning reach of this program, that they could get as an example. I'm trying to find a specific section in the piece. They could basically get the permission to identify a mosque, as an example, as being of risk. And in that way, they could monitor something with complete impunity, from license plates numbers to the comings and goings to the ever innermost workings of this mosque, without any type of actual kind of tangible suspicion, really, or and certainly no warrants or anything else like that. And, you know, and the other upshot from this, and this is always what happens because people like the former commissioner, Ray Kelly, who defended the program and everything else, they'll say, oh, look, it averted all of these attacks and all the rest. But the reality is that from everything we know about this program, from everything as it's been documented, it just mainly succeeded in violating people's rights and further harassing and marginalizing a community that already, of course, is on the receiving end of both law enforcement and racial and ethnic and religious discrimination in this country. So, you know, maybe in some ways this parallels some pullback at the NSA. There's obviously still a vast amount of space to go, but at least we're starting to have these conversations. And kudos to de Blasio and Bratton for at least taking these steps so far.
Well, this is great for the Muslim community. I want to know, what about me, the New York police officer who enjoys spying on innocent Muslims? What am I supposed to do now?
Hey, I spent so many time. I was busting my hump at that falafel stand. What am I supposed to do now? No, you know, but I think to be fair, I think one of the things that's actually come out really quickly about all of these things, and it like, because the reason the demographics unit partially was exposed was because cops were talking to journalists off the record and leaking this. Because, you know, the same way with Stop and Frisk, which was this other incredibly problematic racially discriminatory policing practice in New York under the last administration, you know, cops, like good cops, people who actually want to do that job, of which obviously there are many, and I'm not an apologist for police abuse and all the rest, but I think we can all agree that a lot of people are in that job and they would like to, you know, do a good job of it. Just like most other people who work real jobs, they, you know, they would
damn
go.
Damn right, I spied the fuck out of those Muslims.
Matt can never let a just unimpeded comment go by about the police. No, but in all seriousness, I mean, those people who did not, who wanted to have some sense of doing a serious job, hated these programs because instead of going out and building community relations, building cases, they were harassing communities and everything was stat driven, which is exactly how, you know, that's the incentive structure of the leadership, not necessarily the guys on the beat. But obviously with the NYPD, I mean, there's still massive question marks and all sorts of things that have not been fully accounted for, from this program to Stop and Frisk, from the crackdown on Occupy. There's many issues there. I'm just saying, with all of this, if you're a real cop, of which obviously many of them are, really want to do a good job, this is not helping them do that. So that's just important to kind of note. All right, look, I know I've been talking about Bill O'Reilly a lot, and well,
I do have someone who can vouch for me. My horse.
I'm sorry. I just want an excuse to play for that. Play it again. I know I've been talking about Bill O'Reilly a lot. And there is something about Bill O'Reilly. He's not the worst, objectively, of these guys. Many people say,
Michael and I have actually discussed before that we actually think that he's probably the one guy on Fox News who, if you put his like right-wing ideology aside, like if he was just a broadcaster, he'd be the only one on Fox News to have a job.
He's a very talented broadcaster. I mean, actually, I remember, you know, Alec Baldwin actually said that – I don't remember. I think on Howard Stern or something. Alec Baldwin made this joke where he basically said – he goes, look, I disagree with everything O'Reilly says, but he's a great broadcaster. And Sean Hannity is like a gym coach from Long Island that somebody just gave a TV show to.
Oh, yeah. You strip away Sean Hannity's conservative beliefs.
Right.
You got nothing.
You got nothing. And you got and all of these guys, you know, Glenn Beck, obviously, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, they all say things worse than Bill O'Reilly, which makes when Bill O'Reilly's constant racial nonsense, it makes it when he talks about Dr. Tiller and he calls him a Tiller, you know, Tiller the Killer, this type of thing. It makes it more noxious, I think, because A, he's a very talented broadcaster, and because B, I have usually perceived in some ways a little bit more cynicism around Bill O'Reilly. Now, obviously, I don't know what's inside Bill O'Reilly's head. I can only judge him by the kind of cross of inadvertently hilarious, ludicrous, stupid, and, you know, occasionally profoundly, genuinely offensive and functionally racist things he says. But, you know, barring that, I don't know what goes on inside his head. But there was a new piece of sound that happened a couple days ago.
Would the best way to describe this be, we don't know what's going on in Bill O'Reilly's head, so let's take a look into Bill O'Reilly's heart?
You know, I don't even know if this is a glimpse into Bill O'Reilly's heart, but this is the first glimpse into Bill O'Reilly where I mean,
I don't know.
I don't know what's going on with the guy. I hope he's taking his ginkgo. All right. So Bill O'Reilly had on John Calipari, who I should just say, I know a lot of people don't like John Calipari. I grew up.
I honestly don't have a clue who
he
is.
Well, I mean, I'm a big basketball fan, but I grew up rooting for UMass. And when I was, you know, 11, 12, whatever, you know, they were really good. He coached UMass. I still have this soft spot for him. And he has a new book out on how he coaches. And, you know, it's some sports book. He just took Kentucky to the finals. They played an incredible tournament. You know, whatever else you think of the guy, he's a lot of talent as a basketball coach. And the other thing about John Calipari is he's done this thing where he spent a lot of his time actually working with young black men. And that means that he doesn't have just kind of utterly ludicrous ideas about them. And let's listen to this interview of Bill O'Reilly asking John Calipari what it's like to coach young black guys.
And hanging with you for a year. You know? I mean, you're a good guy, coach, but hey. Now, culture has coarsened. You know, you teach at a public school, University of Kentucky, but it's coarsened. I mean, I don't know whether you listen to this rap stuff and the hip-hop stuff. Has that changed their attitude? I mean, how do you impose discipline?
Okay, first of all, I mean, I thought we had this conversation about rap, like, before, like, we were in puberty. I mean, really? You look at the world today and you're still at rap music? And number two, if you ever read any smart theorist like Trish Rose, I think her name is, or anybody who writes about rap music, and you want to have a criticism of some of the problems in rap music, you go after the capitalist imperatives of the record labels. I don't think we'll be hearing a Bill O'Reilly doing that anytime soon. All right, go ahead.
On kids who are pretty much going to do what they want to do.
Well, they trust. You got to have trust first that, you know, that they look at me and say, he's about me. That's what this book is about. They know that I'm about them, and the decisions I make are in their interest, not my own, which is why I have a lot of kids leaving. I'm not influencing them to stay. I'll tell them I want to keep coaching you, but I'm not going to hold you back. That's a big part of this. Do they trust you enough? Do they look at you and say, he's going to do right by me? I tell a kid to stay, you know the people around them are going to say, he's just trying to win more games. Right. I've got to let them make their decisions.
But do they act differently toward you? I mean, do they use four-letter words toward you?
No.
None of that. So you impose strict discipline on them?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Here's what I would. Just to be really clear, John Calipari just talked about a coaching philosophy where he puts responsibility in his players' hands and tries to make clear that he's an ally of them in their careers. Bill O'Reilly took all that in and asked, hey, do your players go, yo, motherfucker, Coach Cal, what's up? That's basically what O'Reilly just said. And then if you hear Calipari, he's very polite. But before that, when the first part of his answer is, no, no, no. Okay, let's keep playing this.
Tell you, these kids come from good homes. You know, people will say, well, he doesn't have a father. Some of the best kids I coached were raised by a grandmother who was so firm that they understood.
So you evaluate their character before you give them the scholarships.
Plus, again, that's actually a really profound point that Calipari just made. You know, going back to the Moynihan report, actually, which someone mentioned on the phone a couple weeks ago, this demonization. And first of all, now, obviously, that there are more, white families have similar divorce rates, and there's different types of familial arrangements that more closely track in terms of the numbers of the African-American community. Now, of course, all these things aren't the same type of moral and social crisis that they were when people were just lecturing the black community. So that's one thing to keep in mind. But number two, Calipari is actually doing something really interesting there and really radical in a way. I don't think that's how he intends it. I think it's just his experience. But he's saying, like, look, obviously no one wants to grow up not knowing who one of their parents are, okay? And of course that's a tragedy. But this notion that a single mother or even single grandparent household cannot impose a good lifestyle on a kid and help them focus and help them succeed is rooted in so much, I mean, misogyny, delusion, and also, frankly, just bad social science, that it's mind-blowing. And to hear Calipari go to that before O'Reilly even goes there and set it straight is great. All right, I just wanted to say it. Go ahead.
Walk in a home and a young man disrespects his mother or grandmother in front of me, I'm out. Because if that's the case, he respects no one. He's not going to respect me.
Okay. How do you keep them away from temptation with the hustlers everywhere? Whew. So they go out with
a girl. I just have to say, he goes, like the hustlers everywhere. And Calipari goes, who? Go ahead.
And the girl is going to say, hey, you raped me. There's drugs everywhere. You're giving the kids the drugs for free. All right.
All right. I'm sorry. Pause it again. This is how literally mind breaking this. And I say this consciously. I'm trying to coin a new phrase. I felt my mind was broken by this clip. So he's sliding. Now he's saying, well, what about when your kid, you know, because if you wanted to be the most sympathetic, sure, there's temptation available to college athletes. Okay. That's not a surprise. But he's saying, like, well, what are you going to do with these kids when, you know, they go and there are these hustlers around, which he does not specify. Like, maybe he could say, what are you going to do when a sports agent is trying to give them a bribe? Or, how do you handle their normal college interests and things like partying, which have the potential to be bigger because they're stars? So he says hustlers. So he uses this unnecessary, stupid racial term. And then he goes, and the girls who say are going to accuse them of rapes that they didn't commit. So at the first moment where he gives these kids the benefit of the doubt after racially imputing them for 2 minutes in the face of everything John Calipari is saying about how good they are, finally he's like, and, you know, I mean, also, let's be fair, too. I mean, sometimes these kids are probably going to get accused of a rape they didn't commit. Am I right?
It's amazing how in his racism he was even able to sneak in some sexism. And some misogyny.
I'm sure Bill O'Reilly doesn't know that, of course, there's a rape crisis on college campuses, and rape has actually been one of the defining problems in both professional and college sports. But that's the one area where he's like, hey, and, you know, the kids, you know, I mean, they could be accused of rape by some chick. I mean, you know, there's the hustlers. All right, keep playing.
One of the things I tell them, come to Kentucky, as you know, if you want to smoke, drink, chase, do all that stuff, they'll do a 30-30 on you. They'll be on the ticker. You'll be on every news show. You can't do that here. You're coming here to be developed as a person and as a player.
How many buy into that?
Because
temptation is strong.
We'll deal with issues as they come up, but they all look at the results. You and I know it's one thing to walk in and say, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. It's another thing to say, here's what we've done. Here's how they've been developed.
Okay. So that's John Calipari again, and incredibly politely explaining that most of his kids are obviously extraordinarily gifted, world-class basketball players and athletes, and also like nice, normal young guys who want to go to college, who want to have a nice life and develop themselves. And of course, in many cases, because his players are top rate, probably make it into the NBA. And Bill O'Reilly keeps saying, well, yeah, but how does that confirm with the fact that I know all of your players are young black thugs who swear at you and listen to rap music? Like, in Bill O'Reilly's mind, they show up on a bus and they say to Coach Calipari, they go, hey, motherfucker, where's my basketball? When's practice? Because I'm not showing up. Hey, whoa, 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 whoa. Wait a second. When I was out smoking and drinking and doing drugs and listening to A$AP Rocky, a girl accused me of rape that I didn't commit. So can you help me, coach? I mean, what the fuck is going on in Bill O'Reilly's head?
To be honest, who
is listening to this?
I'm surprised he hasn't taken it as so far as to say, do the yo motherfucker thing for me, by the way.
Yo motherfucker. Yeah, exactly. Yo, motherfucker. Coach Cal, where my scholarship?
Like,
motherfucker.
Really? Like,
I mean,
unbelievable.
And we're doing this very much intentionally because we thought that Bill O'Reilly had an experience in 2007 that apparently, even in his mind-bogglingly limited and addled mind, somehow conveyed to him the point that there were African Americans in this country who could do things like go to a basketball practice, go to a concert, or in this specific instance, run a restaurant and serve food without saying, well, listen to Bill O'Reilly explain this.
Hey. That's right. Oh, there wasn't one person in Sylvia's who was screaming, MF-er, I want more iced tea.
Please.
You know, I mean, everybody was, it was like going into an Italian restaurant in an all-white suburb in the sense of people were sitting there and they were ordering and having fun and there wasn't any kind of craziness at all.
I like how he's, I mean.
Bill, I would just like to say right now, as someone who comes from an Italian family, they're fucking crazy. What is he talking about?
Well, I mean, that goes without saying. Of course, Italian people are crazy. But if you noticed, Bill O'Reilly in that clip is like an Italian restaurant in an all-white suburb. So Bill O'Reilly is like, hey, don't come at me with that swarthy Sicilian shit. I don't trust that either. That's how white I am.
No, I know this is all funny, but I think it's really telling that to Bill O'Reilly – a well-behaved black man, woman, child is someone who acts white.
Oh, I mean, you cannot even unpack the, like, this is overdetermined by how many racially, economic, social, cultural, historical problems there are in 3-4 minutes of listening to this guy talk. But what I had thought was that the Sylvia's experience had taught him that there were black people who were capable of making it through basic social interactions without his saying, hey, MF-er. But apparently Bill O'Reilly has regressed. And even after watching the Kentucky team play and there be, you know, in the Kentucky team, there are two brothers on the same team. The mother shows up and watches. One of the star players, his mother was actually a player in the women's professional basketball, and she cheers him on for every game. But Bill O'Reilly knows in his heart of hearts that as soon as the cameras are off and as soon as the coaching is happening, which incidentally, every time we have seen private footage of a coach, and not Calipari, no one's ever said this about Calipari, every time a video leaks of a college basketball coach, it's not a black kid saying, yo, MF, or I'm not going to practice. It's a friggin' lunatic white guy smashing basketballs in some kid's leg, pushing him and punching him, and in Bobby Knight's case, putting his hands around that kid's neck. What about that out-of-control white behavior, Bill? Jesus Christ. We're going to take a quick break.
First, let's play that Jimmy Reefer Cake song.
Okay. All right. You got it? You got it all lined up?
Jimmy Reefer Cake sent us this song for last Friday. Sam was mobile. He was in broadcasting live from Vegas, so he didn't get a chance to play it. So we will play
someone who can vouch for me.
My horse. All right. So here it is. States' Rights in Kentucky from Jimmy Reefer Cake.
Is Matt Bevin the libertarian challenger to Mitch McConnell, who has those real libertarian principles? States' rights, man. We got to legalize the cockfighting in Kentucky. Yes. The birds have a right to fight. Legalize the cockfighting in Kentucky. Oh, a cockfighting, a lot of people want to criticize it, but it's a state's rights, man. Oh, and we want to legalize it, legalize the cockfighting in Kentucky. Oh, the birds have a right to fight, yes. Legalize the cockfighting in Kentucky. in Kentucky.
There you go.
Let the birds fight if they want to fight.
Here, here.
And no one That's will right. take away the freedom of the birds to fight.
Hey, man. Tell
Say it.
Say
in
it.
Kentucky.
It's a dang-old tradition around here.
Uh-huh.
We're going to let them birds fight if we want to.
Let them fight.
States' rights. Let the bird fight.
States' rights.
Let the bird fight.
States' rights.
Let the bird fight. States' rights.
All right, Jimmy.
All right. So, Jimmy, that is a Peter Tosh-inspired libertarian redneck who likes to torture animals. That's a lot of things going on.
For those who are unfamiliar with this story, one of Mitch McConnell's opponents – Republican who's a libertarian who's running against him in the primaries.
Yes.
Bevin.
Yes.
He showed up at a legalized cockfighting rally to obviously they want to legalize cockfighting, which is illegal in all 50 states, I believe. I think it's only legal in Puerto Rico, which is not a state. And they want to legalize it in Kentucky. And he claims he was only there because he doesn't agree with cockfighting, but if a state wants to let it happen, then they should be allowed to. Yeah.
Sweet. I mean, I expect another Legalize It cover from you in the future, because I'm sure that that song is an important song to you, and I want to hear it again. And I'm a fan of that Peter Tosh song as well. Let's hear some new reggae, and we're going to make a transition, and we'll be right back.
Me see a way, drastically straight from hypocrisy, I say, hey, every man to them own a philosophy, I live the proper way and then me read a chapter daily, man they in a city hungry and no eat, and food they down a country just a drop off of the tree then, to see say poverty no real then, is what the reason revealing. I'm pleased to be chilling in the West Indies. I provide all my wants and needs. I got the sunshine, rivers and trees. Green leaves, yeah.
When the rain hits up at 20 roof, herb just a steam pepper pot 20 stew. Life is a dream if you got gratitude. So go tell the regime them can't stop where we do now. Information you think on your own, or else you're a slave to the things that you know. What do you know if you learn every day? So be careful of things where you say.
We are back. Thank you all for sticking with us during this little break. Who was that again?
That was Chronics featuring Protégé.
It's a great song.
It is a great song.
Let's get right to some stories here. Oh, before we do that, I think we guys should get to this email. So, the past few days, we've been covering the Bundy Ranch saga, I guess you can call it, here on the Majority Report. On Monday, we talked to Ian Milheiser from Think Progress, who gave us a rundown of the showdown at Bundy Ranch that happened over the weekend. And then just yesterday, Tuesday, we had Matt Ford of The Atlantic on the show to discuss the states' rights issue, because that's the argument that these militia groups and Clavin Bundy himself are using to say that they should be able to use this land without paying the federal government grazing fees like every other rancher does. So I received this email on Monday night. So this is before yesterday's interview about the states' rights issue. And this email is from a listener who I will just call John L. And John L., I implore you that if you haven't already, you go and listen to yesterday's interview as well as the interview you already listened to on Monday, because that'll deal with some of what you sent in this email.
And become a member.
Yes. So John L. writes, your report about Bundy Ranch was the most useless crap I've ever seen.
Sounds promising.
Sounds promising, yes. I'm looking forward to this. But just you know, thought running through my mind. If the Bundy Ranch report that I did on Monday was the most useless crap I've ever seen, but it spawned your email would not exist if it wasn't for that report. Then that report was useful for something, in this case, your email. So it is only the second most useless crap I've ever seen. Your email, is the most useless crap I've ever seen.
Follow that, John L.
That's right. John L. continues, Clive Bundy's argument on Hannity was that it was public land belonging to the state of Nevada, not the federal government. Like I mentioned before, I spoke to Matt Ford of The Atlantic, who is also from Nevada. However,
not Nevada.
Not Nevada.
That's all I'll say.
So you are wrong. In fact, Clive and Bundy sent the money to the state of Nevada, and the state of Nevada told Clive Bundy, we cannot accept this. This is the federal government's money. John L. continues again. The reason that the federal government could enter was based on protecting a tortoise species through a federal environmental law to protect endangered species. False.
I am sure that's wrong.
False. I will give John L. this, because he clearly misheard or got his information from InfoWars or someone else who misheard. They are saying that one of the reasons he cannot be grazing so many cattle on the land is because there is a desert tortoise who is endangered. They have a habitat on the area. But again, the federal government could enter because it's their land. The problem, John L. continues, the problem is that his cattle do not affect the turtle, but then that's not a problem if that's your argument. But anyway, do not affect the turtle, and there's no reason they should charge fees when the government owns the land and not the federal government. What? First of all, they're not taking off his property. The cattle off – they're not taking the cattle off his property because, A, it's not his property, and, B, it's not – he can't use the land. A, he can use the federal government's land if he pays the grazing fees like every other rancher, and, B – being that you brought the desert tortoise into this, I looked up the information about it from numerous sources, mostly local Nevada sources. And what the real issue here is that the government said, the federal government said, if as long as he pays his fees, his cattle can graze on the land, but no more than 150 cattle can. Because any more of that is destructive to the protected land of the tortoise. Now, Clive and Bundy, being that he's a great guy who, you know, always wants to compromise and help each other out, he had 900 cattle, specifically because to defy the federal government, he had 900 cattle grazing on this land. So if he pays his fee, he can have no more than 150 cattle grazing on this federal government land. So John L. continues, all ranchers support Bundy Ranch. Well, I don't know about that, but John L., you should check your sources. Maybe Alex Jones ain't the best source for you.
That's the type of thing that and of course, kudos because you took that seriously enough to actually do a segment on it and respond to it. But if I knew absolutely nothing about this whatsoever and somebody said to me, yeah, the federal government's sending law enforcement to crack down on a guy because of a tortoise – and there's a major standoff about it. Not true. Nope. Yeah. False.
No.
Definitely not.
I wish the federal government cared that much
about
it.
That's my kind of authority.
Yeah, cared so much about an endangered tortoise. Let me tell you, as the animal lovers we are in this room.
I'm into it. That's what you'll get from my administration.
Mitch McConnell's relatives could be living in that land.
Why isn't Mitch concerned about it? I'm sure they're much more concerned.
All right. Well, speaking of Bundy Ranch, I'm sorry if any of you are sick of this, but I highly doubt it because
no, there's a lot to this.
Yes, everyone loves this story. So we're gonna need the sound for this. In fact, 1 second, I need to do something to fix the sound.
What? Well, Matt, this is amazing. This is the type of thing. It's completely unprepared for this. You're hearing us in motion here, folks. We are actually, I'm very aware of that. We are not going to be cutting this. You got a sense of us because this is the more informal day here.
No, I had to go over to the soundboard and get the sound.
I have not turned the sound up. I'm waiting to give Matt an aneurysm. All right, no, I'm just kidding. Okay, we're all set for this. This is amazing.
So this comes to you. Now, this is shocking. I can't believe I'm sourcing this website on this show. But kudos, you know, props where they are due. The Blaze, the Glenn Beck news site, they covered. They were the first to cover this. And it's quite scary. And they even call it chilling. Now, former Arizona sheriff Richard Mack. I'm assuming his friends gave him the nickname Mac Daddy.
Probably
He seems like the type of guy.
I ain't trying to give you no black name, Mac.
Well, anyway, this former Arizona sheriff, Richard Mack, was one of the militiamen or organizers, you know, the states' rights, you know, the anti-U.S. government patriots, as funny as that sounds,
yes.
who showed up. He traveled to Clark County, Nevada, to support Clive and Bundy during this land dispute with the federal government. And he was on the local news, and the local news was able to get him to share a very secret undercover strategy. Now, this strategy is what the people defending Clive and Bundy and his Bundy Ranch, it's what they would have deployed if it came down to an actual shootout. If there was gunfire from either side, both sides, whatever. If a gun battle broke out during the standoff between the Bundy ranchers and the federal government this past weekend, this is the strategy, the patriotic, states' rights, God-fearing militiamen, I'm assuming many are conservative, Republican, libertarian, this is what they would have done. Put that sound all the way up. It's got to be all the way up.
It's all the way up.
Above and around were marksmen in sniper positions. A retired Arizona sheriff worried about what was going to happen next.
We were actually strategizing to put all the women up at the front. If they're going to start shooting, it's going to be women that are going to be televised all across the world getting shot by these rogue federal officers.
Wow.
Let me just repeat what he said because I need to maybe we heard it wrong. Maybe you know how the media likes to twist and turn these right wingers' words around. Richard Mack, former Arizona sheriff and Bundy Ranch supporter, who is standing out there protesting the federal government to save Bundy Ranch's rights to mooch off public land owned by the federal government, he said, "We were actually strategizing to put all the women up at the front. If they are going to start shooting, it's going to be the women that are going to be televised all across the world getting shot by these rogue federal officers."
That's chilling.
I just don't. These are supposed to be the brave, patriotic cowboys who freedom or death. Give me liberty or give me death. I would die for this, for my freedoms and my rights. But we're gonna use these women here as shields because I'm a little bit, you know, don't really want to die. It's stunning to me.
Or I would sacrifice my wife for a little bit of what I think is good PR.
Oh yeah.
But what's the real reason it's good PR?
Oh, the real reason it's good PR, you know, if you really think about it, these guys, you know, if you are Richard Mack, you're probably thinking to yourself, you know, I don't see what's so wrong about this. I mean, if people cared about men as much as they cared about women, then we wouldn't have had to put them on the front lines to begin with. I mean, it's not my fault that misandry runs rampant in this country. I mean, it's not my fault that if a man was put on the front lines and a gunfight broke out, the media just wouldn't care about the battle. I mean, it's not my fault. I'm just doing what anybody would do. If sexes, if people valued the life of a man in this country like they valued the life of a woman, we would not have this. I mean, these are the same guys.
So he's a men's rights activist.
He's a men's rights activist too, I'm sure. But these are the same guys who claim there is no war on women. There's no Republican, conservative, right-wing war on women. I mean, they are literally putting these – saying they would put these women on the front lines in an actual war. Are you kidding me?
Well, if the federal agent does it, then it's the liberal doing it. So they're the ones doing the war on women.
Listen, it's just not.
You know, and you know, I mean, it's hilarious. But I think what's amazing about the clip is he doesn't even have. There's no Louis Gomer Pyle thing. Like he's just like, yeah, we put the women in front. I mean, that the cold sociopathic is stunning. It tells you everything you need to know.
It can't really blame him though. It's misandry.
It's misandry.
Misandry. The media should care more about the men in this country. God.
When are we ever going to catch a break? Well, I do. I did have a theory about it, but yeah.
What's your theory?
Benghazi.
Benghazi.
It's a distraction.
Benghazi.
Absolutely.
We're not going to fall for that, though.
Yeah.
And I guess finally here, we're going to – I got one more story for you all. You know what? You brought up Benghazi. We're a little bit early, actually. This is fun. You might have heard that last Thursday, a woman showed up to a Hillary Clinton speech in Las Vegas. Vegas seems to be a real crazy country right now.
Indeed.
Nevada, I mean, seems to be a real crazy country right now. So a woman shows up at a Hillary Clinton speech and throws a shoe at her. She missed.
Yes.
And she was taken out, and it comes out now that that she's a conspiracy theorist and she's a homie, you know, the people who followed James Holmes, the Aurora shooter. In fact, she took out a restraining order against him because he was controlling her mind, she said.
Obviously what this woman did is absolutely terrible, but I mean, James Holmes shouldn't be controlling her mind.
Yes. Yeah, no, I mean, come
yeah,
on.
No, I mean, I
come
just
on,
I think
James.
We need to be fair.
James,
here. Yeah.
Really? Come on.
Yeah.
No, but
yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
So, all the right-wing blogs have been discussing this in terms of, you know, there's something more here. And that something more is that Hillary Clinton staged this all. Now, I would like to say that I came out in the front of this, and Thursday night when I heard this happened, I put out a tweet on Twitter. And this was Thursday night, and I said something to the effect of, wow, can't believe Hillary Clinton hired someone to throw a shoe at us to distract us all from Benghazi. Little did I know that my services could be – I could get paid for my services because just a few days later, Rush Limbaugh says this. You could bring this down.
Relate to people who think that everything the Clintons do is staged or choreographed. And I haven't seen it. I've got people telling me that her reaction wasn't natural.
She ducked.
But I'm sorry. I'm ill-equipped to comment. I haven't seen it.
She avoided the shoe, you fuck. Excuse me. Sorry. I shouldn't say that.
No, I haven't cared enough to go try to find it. I really haven't. Somebody threw a shoe at Hillary. Big whoop. Maybe it's because in my subconscious, I think it was staged or set up or whatever. I know these people so well that the one thing that I can probably attest, I just do not attach much genuineness to them at all. And I don't know why anybody would be throwing a shoe at Hillary unless
they listen
maybe
to you.
It's an attempt to make the Benghazi people look like nuts and lunatics and wackos, if, even if anything to do with that, which I don't know.
Let me tell you, Hillary Clinton does not have to hire anybody to do anything to make the Benghazi people look like nut jobs and wackos. They're doing just fine. And you know where Rush heard this from?
I do have someone who can vouch for me. My horse.
Amazing.
I didn't really Rush's horse is up on Benghazi.
Amazing. Really amazing. Yeah. And the final story of today. Hope you enjoyed today's special Matt and Mike Wednesday. And tomorrow, Friday, Monday and Tuesday, we will have special archive shows for you. Thursday,
right.
Friday, because tomorrow is
indeed.
Thursday.
Indeed.
We will have very special archive shows for you. The deep archives from the Air America days. And then we are all back with Sam Cedar hosting the show on Wednesday of next week. We hope you have a wonderful Passover, Easter, whatever you celebrate. Now, that said, you can become a member today at Majority.fm. You can support this show by subscribing to us at our YouTube channel, youtube.com/Sam Cedar. Follow us at Majority FM on Twitter. Like us on facebook.com/Majority Report. You can also download the app at majorityapp.com. Download it on your friends' phones, the model phones at your local cell phone store. And you can also go to justcoffee.coop. That's .coop, C-O-O-P. And you can use coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. And
support a business where everyone wins.
And then you can also go to majorityreportkickback.com and get all your Amazon stuff through there. And you can take a little bit of money from Amazon and put it in our pockets by doing that. I think that's the best way to look at it.
Swing.
And with all that said, I leave you with the final story of today. Now, you all know how I love to joke about Bitcoin. It makes me laugh. And I don't think the Bitcoin technology and the idea of Bitcoin is all that bad, you know, if you look at it in terms of, you know, another sort of investment, a type of thing to invest in. It's not going to replace currency. Give me a break. But I do find it funny, and I do love the people who are into these cryptocurrencies. And, you know, it's good when we have more cryptocurrencies out because, you know, Bitcoin is lumped in with these cryptocurrencies because that's what it is. And these other cryptocurrencies sort of, you know, they make Bitcoin either seem more or less legit. Now, what helps make Bitcoin seem a little bit more legit? Well, it's gotta be Juggalo Coin. That's right. The fans of rap duo from
it's
Detroit.
It's really an insult to rap to call them rap.
Well, that's
I just
what
need
they
to
are.
Add that in.
The Insane Clown Posse, Shaggy 2 Dope, Violent J.
Oh my God.
Their fans are called Juggalos, and Juggalos are creating their own cryptocurrency. And I gotta say, these guys are really dropping the ball, calling it Juggalo Coin, and not the Insane Coin Posse.
It's right there.
How do you Insane Clown Posse, the ICP, that's what the people call them, ICP. Insane Coin Posse, jeez. Well, Vice reports that Juggalo Coin, the world's first cryptocurrency intended solely for use by followers of the Insane Clown Posse, was announced. It will launch at the annual Gathering of the Juggalos, which is a big event in, I believe, Illinois, where Juggalos from all over the world come and congregate and sell lots of drugs to each other. And what better way to sell drugs to each other and not get in trouble for doing so than by using an untraceable cryptocurrency?
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, but whatever. Vendors at the – this is what they hope for. Vendors at the Gathering of Juggalos will establish relationships that will allow Juggalo Coin to be accepted at the Gathering. I highly doubt that it's going to happen. I can't imagine these people figuring this out. To give them credit – most people, including myself, haven't even sat down to figure out how to accept or send Bitcoin.
Indeed.
So they're hoping this will then turn to lead to the official ICP online store accepting Juggalo Coin, which will then lead to the entire Juggalo universe dealing in Juggalo coins.
Ah.
On JuggaloCoin.org, the innovator behind this enterprise, Papa Nut.
Sounds like a very fitting name for the creator of a currency.
Yes. He said that the currency is a means of keeping funds in the family, which, if you don't know, that's what Juggalos also call each other, the family, and for promoting the positive aspects of the Juggalo lifestyle, and also to support Juggalo charities and promoting, I don't know what a Juggalo charity is, but I'm assuming they help out other Juggalos, and promoting recognition of February 17th as International Juggalo Day. I'm very sad we missed this year's Juggalo Day.
I'm really not impressed or happy about any of this.
Now, if you want some Juggalo coin and you are a Juggalo, which I guess you prove by sending them a picture of yourself in Juggalo face paint, because I don't know how they could tell you're a Juggalo or not, Papa Nut wants you to just go to the site, say you're a Juggalo, and they will disperse these coins to you for free to help launch it. However, the weird thing is that, like the founder of Bitcoin, Nakamoto, Papa Nut's identity is a mystery. And the website does not contain an address.
Ah.
And, you know, to contact him by. And the Whois information lists his address as, I'm sure you could just look this up on Google Maps. Can you pull it up for me, Michael, actually?
Yep.
It's 1 Clown Lane.
Ah. It's right here.
Yes. Now, if you're not a Juggalo and you see that there's something here, you want to invest in Juggalo coin, Papa Nut has made the clarification that non-Juggalos are welcome to buy Juggalo coin. They just don't get it for free. Now, I wouldn't doubt the Juggalos.
That's really difficult.
Because
it's so sad I'm shut out of that market.
Because, I mean, listen, I enjoy the Insane Clown Posse's professional wrestling work. But but listen, don't doubt the Juggalos because, listen, who else drinks Faygo but Juggalos? I mean, literally, the Juggalo community has kept an entire soda company in business just by being Juggalos and drinking it. So I wouldn't doubt the Juggalo coin. I would pull all your money out of Bitcoin before you lose more in whatever Bitcoin currency exchange you have it sitting in. And I would put all your money into Juggalo coin. And that's my piece of investment advice for all of you.
We just had a Kramer moment on the Majority Report. Really, 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 really briefly, we need to sign off, but I hate when we do this. We promised yesterday or today, I realize, that you would get the – well, first of all, we promised Right Wing Mandela. That's not happening, but obviously much more of that in the future. So do not worry, and Scott Brown will be victorious. But – the story of my middle name is super very, very simple.
Oh, yes. We got the –
incredibly
yes.
simple. So basically
– I'm glad we kept this for the end.
Yeah, we kept this for the end. Okay. You know, to the one person that remembered who would tweet about this, my mom had a friend, I believe, who – they were Baha'i, who I've written about. I've written about the Baha'i community, and I grew up knowing people in the Baha'i community. And basically one of their kids was named Jamal, or Jamal was the middle name. My mom loved it. They were young, floated the name Jamal as a possible middle name. My dad's mother, my grandmother obviously on his side, freaked out, said no, 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 no. And my parents being who they were, that sealed the deal. That's my middle name. Travel in Israel really hard. Travel in Jordan, incredibly easy. And a great way to have cab drivers in certain Middle Eastern countries be at least a little bit more thoughtful about ripping me off, and has led to many interesting interactions.
And, you know, being that you're bringing up your middle name, it's quite the story, actually. It's an interesting story. And for those who are wondering about my middle name, which is Harrison.
They weren't.
Which is Harrison.
Go ahead.
There's also an equally interesting story. My name is Matthew Harrison Binder. And the reason my middle name is Harrison is because when I was born, my mom had a celebrity crush on Harrison Ford.
Well, there you go. Bada bing. Okay,
and,
tomorrow's
you know,
show.
I mean, it feels weird not ending with IM, and we missed this IM at the end of yesterday's show, so let me end it with this IM here.
Okay,
it's a short IM.
Okay.
CDDB, regarding that guy's challenge about rape culture, which if you listen to yesterday's show, you'll remember, sounds like y'all have some men's rights activists in the audience. That shit is becoming more and more popular online. Would love to hear Sam and or Eminem address these people. And we definitely actually should have a whole Eminem show. This is something more that we would cover than Sam, unless they're trying to dismantle Social Security and defund Medicare, Medicaid, and whatever else. I think we should.
I need to learn more about it, but I'd be happy to look into it.
And we will do it.
I'm down. All right. Deep archives tomorrow. Good night. Have a great day, everybody.
Happy holidays. Enjoy your days. Good time off. The strength I
got to get to where I want. But I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. Finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the Nets are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. Into years, while I shifted in and out of gear, waiting for my moment to happen. I don't know how much longer I can stay in, or how much more I've got to pay to play in. I know somehow the lights got graded somewhere before the credits faded, but my pilot light shining. Pilot light shining bright.